Greetings, golf fans. Sports Guy Ty here. Another week on the beautiful grind starts the Florida swing at PGA National in Palm Beach Gardens. Certainly not the field strength we've become accustomed to after back-to-back elevated events at Phoenix and the Riv, but plenty of interesting names to chew on and a strategy required all the same. Shorter cards this week for both Shallocal and myself, but even so, we overlap on two names from the European Tour for a chance at the first team win of 2023. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. Enjoy. Welcome to the Honda Classic Preview and Tip Show. This is episode 70 of Playing the Tips and one more week on the beautiful grind. Coming to you from the town that put the world on wheels, I am your host, Sports Guy Ty, and you can find me on Twitter at Sports Guy Ty. And from the People's Republic of Ann Arbor, Shallocal, whom you can find on the Twitters at Shallocal Golf. Don't forget to follow us as well at Playing Tips Pod, where we post our weekly cards. Shallocal, what are we drinking tonight?
I am back on the unofficial official beer of Michigan, the Two Hearted, sponsored and brought to you by the one and only Jordan Spieth and Full Swing.
I was just going to say, the only reason you're drinking a Two Hearted tonight is because you watched Full Swing.
That's not the only reason I'm drinking a Two Hearted. I drink a Two Hearted all the time. Probably have too many Two Hearteds as it stands.
It's a little tastier when you see Jordan Spieth throwing one back in the opening credits of Full Swing.
Well, in the opening credits, you see JT drinking the Oberon. And yep. it was like, oh, Oberon, Bells, that's sweet. And you forget that, we have it year round. And now that they have their distribution so widely and readily available to the nation, you forget how it once used to be so special, the Oberon. It was truly a end of spring, start of summer beer. And, once that Oberon came around, you were ready to kick it into gear.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember being a sophomore in college, and when I got to bring my car back second semester.
I thought you were going to say high school. Because.
Well, honestly, I mean, truly the time frame that you're talking about where it really was that niche, we were drinking it in high school.
Yeah. none of our parents are listening, but I'm sure they already know from the empty cans that they found.
Yeah, they know. I threw a case of Oberon in the back of my car when I got to bring it back to college at Ole Miss second semester. It was off season then, of course, but around Ann Arbor, you could find it a lot of times off season. And I just remember being so proud and so happy to bring that Oberon down there. But shoot, now it's not only is it everywhere, but it's a very different beer as well from what we grew up drinking.
Oh yeah, you can see right through it now. And you used to not. There was used to be so much haze and sediment back then that there was. It was just like a big orange cloud.
Yep. Well, no Bells for me, but no Labatt Blue Light either. This week I'm on a similar brewery to the Bells Brewery, Great Lakes Brewing Company. I had one Rogue Christmas Ale kicking around, so that's what I'm finishing off tonight.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, well, we will recap Riviera very briefly and then get into the Honda Classic. But let's stay on Full Swing just for a moment since we started down that path. How many episodes are you in?
Seven.
Perfect.
Seven down. How about you?
So I'm still just one episode in.
Yeah.
Feel like I know most of what is coming based on golf Twitter, but I'm trying to wait for my wife to get on the bandwagon and join me. Our lives have been kind of crisscrossing on the work front, and with a young one at home, we just haven't been able to align schedules to get her caught up to the first one so I can keep going. So I'm only through episode one.
Yeah. Thought so far through episode one?
I will say this. I hope it gets better. Not that I disliked episode one. I am maybe just a little worried about the show drawing in non-hardcore golf fans and then being able to sustain them.
So I think the complete opposite. I think the reason that it's boring to us is because we're big fucking nerds and we already know everything that's going on and happening. And it's kind of like just a, you know, they're building that suspense up at the PGA Championship with the JT and the Jordan, and Jordan struggling, and we know Jordan sucked, and we know JT won. So there was really no suspense or buildup or anything like that, you know? We know the caddies, you know, we know Greller, we know Bones, you know, we know their significant others and Annie, and JT's fiance. We know about JT's dad and grandpa. I wish they would have touched on the grandpa more, man, because I feel like that was really glossed over. You know, that could have really pulled on some heartstrings there for people like me and you who already kind of know, but to really see him get emotional about his grandfather and talk about him after winning the PGA Championship, I wanted a little bit more of that and less of like the crap that we obviously already know.
Yeah, and it was a nice moment with his dad, Mike, no doubt about it. I actually thought that was one of the better parts of the entire first episode, was that glimpse that we got to see when they were kneeling down and they kind of had that embrace and everything.
Yeah.
But like I said, I've seen and I know enough of the spoilers to have a pretty good idea of what's coming. And so I got a feeling that I'll be singing a different tune several episodes in. But I will say the first episode just felt a little bit forced and a little bit contrived. And again, you may be right. It may be because we're much closer to this than your average viewer, who is exactly who they're trying to play to, obviously, broaden the audience. But just like certain scenes, like when Jordan calls JT and talks about the groomsman speech, like that felt to me like a producer was just standing there being like, all right, we need a little bit more B-roll. Jordan, can you call JT? Well, what do you want me to talk about? I mean, anything. Like, talk about his wedding. Talk about the speech. Okay. And I feel like that's that's kind of what we got from that particular scene.
You know, the one thing, you haven't seen this episode yet, but one of the great things, I think, from the next episode, I think it's the next episode. It's the one where it's primarily focused on Brooks. You can see how unhappy he looks being injury prone and shitty at golf to his standards. You know, he talks a lot about how he was the best golfer in the world. I was the best golfer in the world. I was the best golfer in the world. I was the best golfer in the world. And now you can just tell how unhappy he is that he's not that. So that gets it better. And then the Joel Damon episode. I mean, God. That dude is a national treasure. Protect him with all that we have.
Man, I've always loved Joel Damon. I've been on Joel Damon for a long time. I actually became a Joel Damon fan for the first time listening to the Tour Junkies podcast because of his caddy Gino Benelli going on there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Joel can tell stories with the best of them, but I'll be damned if Gino can't sit down, crack a cold one, and keep you entertained.
Yeah, they're a good duo. That's for sure. And it's really funny talking about how if Joel wanted to be a top 20 golfer, top 30 golfer in the world, he could easily do it. He just doesn't care. He's like, somebody's got to be the 60th best golfer in the world. Might as well be me. I'm making millions of dollars. I'm living a good life. I'm happy.
Nothing wrong with that, man. I can respect that in a lot of different lines of work, not necessarily even a professional golfer. Ain't nothing wrong with making good money, taking care of those around you, and, you know, not killing yourself.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's just quickly touch on a bit more news that's come down the pike here the last couple days and actually kind of plays off of what you were saying there with Koepka and kind of his state of mind and where he's at right now. A few more departures to live. A few not maybe as much of a surprise, a couple interesting names as well. Now confirmed, Brendan Steele, Mito Pereira, Thomas Peters, Dean Burmester, Sebastian Munoz officially announced, And then we've also got Danny Lee rumors for Liv. Any of those guys move the needle for you?
I mean, Thomas Peters is a loss. Mito is obviously a loss. We never had Mito week, unfortunately. And I think
I joked about it last week on the podcast. I said, better hurry up because we ain't gonna be no chance for Mito week.
Yeah, Burmy, man, that one. Going back and looking at strokes gain data on the European Tour site brought him back to memory, and that's a bummer for me. I always liked him. European Ryder Cup team is pretty much decimated if they don't have Liv guys playing in it. And gonna get rolled by the USA.
So that's
just the way it is.
Well, I don't think anybody will question that. But interesting what you bring up about the Ryder Cup and if Liv guys can play. I think Thomas Peters is a loss. I think he's the biggest loss actually on this list because he, for all intents and purposes, is a star on the DP World Tour. He's won 6 times. He's won the HSBC Abu Dhabi Championship. He's got a Portugal Masters under his belt. Former NCAA individual champion at Illinois in 2012, actually at the RIV. So that's a loss. And I wonder, to tie this all together to what you were saying about Brooks Koepka earlier and his current mental state. I know the documentary was obviously shot at a very different time. But I wonder how much more Thomas Peters knows than us. He obviously knows more than us. He's the one signing the contract and reading the fine print and everything. But I don't doubt that a lot of those guys at Liv are having second thoughts and maybe a bit of buyer's remorse. And not excusing anything that they've said, done, et cetera. You know, many of them got paid handsomely. But I just wonder, if you haven't gotten all your money up front, you got to be seeing what's going on the PGA Tour with the elevated events and what's continuing to happen with Liv and the official world golf rankings and the battles with the majors, et cetera. And I think you got to wonder, what is my future? Where is my future? Where am I going to be playing in 2, 3, 5 years? And it just strikes me as odd. And again, I don't know any of the details on Thomas Peters' contract and how much money he got, but it strikes me as odd, particularly this year, that he would make that jump given where his status is. And the fact that he had a PGA Tour card, turned it down because he just simply didn't like living in America and being around Americans and wanted to go back to the tour.
Shocking.
Right?
They're a vile bunch, as they say.
Right. So I will wrap it up with this, but I just wonder if there is something more going on behind the scenes that he knows about. Maybe it's opportunities in the future to play more on the DP World Tour for the Liv guys, because they're still, you know, we don't have a whole lot of clarity there moving forward. I wonder if it is something like the Ryder Cup that's now being talked about behind closed doors, et cetera. So again, purely speculation, but I don't know. That one, that's a big loss to me, and it just doesn't fit with the other names and everything that's going on.
Yeah, probably why he wasn't invited to the RIV, but
definitely why. but also, again, he doesn't have a PGA Tour card anymore. So had he had a PGA Tour card, you know, he would have qualified for the RIV.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely why he wasn't invited. Tiger knew.
didn't really matter anyways.
No.
He wasn't beating Rom.
And see, like, even for a guy like Mito going to Liv, I get it, right? Like, he's got
money in.
Well, yeah, and his best buddy's there, Joaquin Niemann. It's not like Thomas Peters is going to join an all German team with a guy he grew up, you know, close with, like, and competing with.
In full swing, you also see that Mito and Waco hang out with Carlos Ortiz and Abe Anser.
Totally.
So now you once all three, like, it was only a matter of time before Mito left.
Yeah. Mito idolizes Waco. He calls him his big brother, despite Waco is considerably younger and more talented. Yeah. But he essentially grew up idolizing the younger Joaquin Niemann. So yeah, it makes sense. You know, I get that one.
Yep. So
I don't know. I'm interested to see what more develops. Obviously got some news on the legal front with the lawsuits and the deposition, et cetera, allowing the deposition to move forward. So a lot of news going to continue to break as it will, but we won't spend too much time there. Quickly recap of Riviera, as you were saying there, nobody beating Jon Rahm. Jason Day missed the places for you by one. Is that right? Two.
His day one, man, day one killed him. Otherwise, he was like I knew he had reverted back to shitty Jason Day. And then he was like, wait a minute, I'm good again. And then started playing really well. But yeah, missed the place by one stroke, unfortunately. Airballed everything. I heard this analogy. Jon Rahm was the dealer at the casino and he got 21. And, if, you know, it's just basically Rahm collects everybody's chips and walks out the door.
Yep. That's about what it was. I was pretty happy to come near a push on the card. I was 10 and a half units in, and Willie Z's solo fourth returned 9 units for me, so down a unit and a half. But, you know, honestly, if I'm going to lose to a guy winning the tournament who was 8.5, 9-1, second place was 20-1, you know, I'm pretty happy with taking my chances and coming out with a push that, this past week at Riviera.
I think he was 650-1 at opening on Bet Rivers.
I mean, and again, like, I'm not upset about that. No. I'll lose to that.
Collect all their money.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about another 6.5-1 here shortly at the Honda Classic.
Gross.
All right, quick agenda. As we do each week, we'll start with tournament and course preview at PGA National. Talk stats to consider, any weather that you need to know about, and then we'll finish up with tips and our best bets. Shallow Cow, what do we need from the people each and every week?
What we need from you guys and gals, hit that like button. Give us a follow on Twitter at Playing Tips Pod. Hit that subscribe button for the Playing the Tips podcast, and you can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, and Google playlists. Don't forget to download that episode and give us a review. Thanks again to all that tune in. We really appreciate it.
We certainly do. All right, let's jump into it. Honda Classic, start of the Florida swing, PGA National Resort and Spa in Palm Beach Garden, Florida. This is the original Jackie Gleason Inverary Classic, which debuted in 1972. Interesting note, first winner of this tournament in 72 was the renowned golf course architect Tom Weisskopf when he was active on the PGA Tour. PGA National has been the site of the Honda Classic since 2007. This is among the toughest courses on tour, and we certainly know that, Shallow Cal, from Matthew Wolff's performance last year.
My golf buddies that we do X golf with, your buddies as well, I guess, they wanted to play this course. And I looked at all of them and I go, do you realize what you're getting yourselves into here? And they had no idea. We played it. And I think one of our friends, I don't want to name any names, but I'll do some initials, D.C., a.k.a. Rodent Face. I think he was 21 over par after 9 holes.
Surprising that he was that good after 9 holes at PGA National.
Yeah, I mean, it is X golf, so, you know, take your grain of salt, but it was quite entertaining. But like you said, annually one of the toughest courses on tour. The Fazio's, designed by Uncle George and Tommy, renoed by Nicholas back in the early 2000s. We're looking at par 70, 7,125 yards. We're back on Bermuda, baby. Bermuda greens, above average size, 7,000 square feet, so not terribly demanding as far as that goes. Your tight Bermuda fairways, overseeded with rye, protected by, you guessed it on this course, water. a lot of forced carries, a lot of water hazards along running with fairways. You're gonna have your fair share of water balls this week. It is a true test of accuracy off the tee and on your approach. You can dunk one in the drink real easily here. Shorter course in terms of driving distance, you're way under tour average. 271 yards driving distance average here compared to 283 yards tour average and other places. 1600 balls in the water on the bear trap since 2007, 15, 16, 17, and 6,200 balls in the water in total since 2007. Mention the bear trap. One of the toughest three-hole stretches in golf. You got par 3, 180-yard par 3, 15. You've got your 450-yard par 4, 16th, and you've got another 175-yard par 3, 17th. Tons of water on this. Coming down the stretch, one of the best finishing stretches in golf, because then you've got the par 5, 18th, right? So you can lose some strokes on 15, 16, 17. You can gain some on 18. It's a great final nine. So hopefully we'll be able to see a competitive finish this week.
Matt Wolf was 17 over par, by the way, to miss the cut last year.
Did you remember that, or was it because I sent you that text message at like midnight last night?
Oh no, I thought I was setting you up on a tee to hit that one out of the park, but you missed the number.
What's
no,
that?
Yes, no, I said I thought I was setting you up to hit that one out of the park, but you didn't give the number earlier.
I was reloading. I had deleted one beer already, so I was going for the next one.
No, I couldn't believe that when you texted me. I remember now, thinking back on it, just how brutal that was.
You know, the crazy thing is that his round two, he was only 6 over par.
Yeah, no, I remember.
So round one was a complete disaster, and I'm really shocked after that there was no WD.
Yeah, that was really something. I think we might need to introduce a new segment moving forward where you go and play the PGA Tour course on X-Golf a couple days prior to the show, and then you give your course vitals section in the context of your round at that course.
Ooh, I like it. But the problem with that is there's probably only about, 10 to 12 courses on X-Golf that they actually play PGA Tour events at. So like right now, the only course that they have is this week's course, PGA National. They have, they do have Pebble Beach, but none of the other courses in the Bay there. And then I guess coming up, they have Bay Hill, but they don't have Sawgrass, and they don't have any of the majors, so it's hit or miss with that.
All right, well, get out there to X Golf and play you a little Bay Hill. Let's hear the breakdown for API.
Is that a tax write-off if I charge it to the podcast account?
Absolutely, it is.
Excellent.
So you mentioned the bear trap at PGA National. Again, one of the toughest, if not the toughest, closing stretch of holes in competitive golf. Par 3, 15th to start the bear trap produces double bogey or worse nearly 9% of the time, which is significantly more than any hole on the course. Since the move to PGA National in 2007, only 5 of 16 winners have reached double digits under par, although each of the last 2 years we've seen it, with Sepp Straka winning last year at 10 under, Matt Jones before him in 2021 at 13 under. Speaking of LIV. But you had a run of really class winners just prior to that at some lower scores. Rory, JT, Adam Scott, Sungjae, Ernie Els, Padraig Harrington have all won here since 07. Padraig is one of four men to win the tournament multiple times, including as a 300-1 long shot at almost 50 years old. Site of the 1983 Ryder Cup, which was a USA win. 1987 PGA Championship as well that went to Larry Nelson. And now 19 senior PGA Championships. So certainly a stern test of golf. 9 of the 16 champions at PGA National have been international. This is a tough, exposed course. Many international players actually resettled around the Palm Beach Gardens area if they are playing primarily now on the PGA Tour, and even some who are still playing overseas. Also a reflection typically just of kind of the strength of field that we get at this event, or that we have gotten at this event in recent years after the move. A lot of guys coming over from Europe because they have the opportunity to do so without many of the big names playing, kind of sandwiched here right after Riv and before a pretty ferocious stretch of golf with API players and then Masters just over the horizon. Okay, anything else shallow, Cal, on the course?
Yeah, I can tell you this right now. Seb Straka ain't shooting 10 under this year.
Hell no, he's not.
Sucks.
I'm still fuming that Seb Straka pipped my boy Shane Lowry last year.
Lowry pipped himself, man.
Well, he got caught in that ridiculous rainstorm, which, and you're right. I mean, I don't understand why he was hustling to play through that rainstorm. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, I feel like he was very confident because he's a you know, an elements player, grew up playing in, he's obviously from Ireland. So I think he was confident in that. And I think he was hoping, and he just rushed himself and got out of rhythm and, bonered it, I guess.
Yeah, no better way to put it. All right, stats to consider for you at PGA National.
Let's go with strokes gained approach, strokes gained tee to green, strokes gained off the tee, and strokes gained putting Bermuda.
Mm. Yes. Making the switch from the POA.
We're making the switch from the POA. There are a lot of players. Well, there is one player in particular that I really like. His name is Billy Ho. And, a lot of people grew up around here. A lot of people play a lot of golf in Florida. And I think that the difference in coming back home and putting surface can make somebody's eyes glisten and twinkle. And we're hoping for that this week. So that's why I went with the strokes gained putting Bermuda. Tee to green, really, because, off the tee is important. Approach is important. You don't want to find yourself wayward on any of these shots, because on a tee shot or an approach shot, you can definitely find yourself in water and, piling up those strokes quick.
Yep.
What are you looking at this week?
Well, let me say, stay with strokes gained tee to green to start. Okay. I agree with everything you're saying there. 4 of the last 5 winners of the event have led in this category. Straka was 4th last year, but each of the others in the top 5 tee to green were all top 10.
He'd have been first if he wasn't wearing those. He would have been first if he wasn't wearing those squares shoes.
I forgot that old Seb Straka wears squares. It's perfect for Seb Straka.
Yeah.
I really think, strokes, that stat, that 4 out of the last 5 have led the field in strokes gained tee to green, is just a reflection of the all-around challenge that we see at PGA National. Different from the very straightforward test of golf we had last week at Genesis. So you got to be good throughout your bag at PGA National. I mean, I feel like a broken record. This stat has kind of replaced my default strokes gained approach every week, but there are truly courses where if you are not a strong tee to green player, you're going to really struggle out there.
Yeah. I'm on especially here, like you said, last week we went from no water at Riv, no frills, no tricks, no gimmicks. I mean, yeah, you got some pretty tough bunkering out there. But now it's, if you're wayward at Riv, you're probably not going to lose a stroke. You're probably going to be punching out and advancing the ball. Here, you're either reteeing or you're dropping and incurring a penalty. So I think strokes gained tee to green here is very, very important.
It's damn difficult to get up and down from 160.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm also on good drives gained for much of what you just mentioned there. It is tough to make a score here if you're not putting the ball in the fairway. If you are in good shape, conversely, off the tee, you know, again, you can grind out a lot of pars here and throw in a few birdies when opportunities present. And more often than not, you're going to be pretty close to the top of that leaderboard if you're not making the big mistake. Very tough to recover here, as you mentioned, if you're wayward. And again, you know, getting up and down from 160 ain't a whole lot of fun.
No. When your first point there, I read that as tough to make a score here if you're not putting it in the fairway. And I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. I wonder how he's going to explain this one.
You definitely don't want to be putting from 160 either. No. all right. Last for me, strokes gained around the green. excuse me. Again, as mentioned, very difficult to hit greens here. Got to be good with a wedge around the greens. The problem is there's not a whole lot of runoffs and collection areas, so you got to also miss in the right spot too to not pick up a few cheap penalty strokes around the green. But again, guys who can get up and down and roll some of those putts to save scores, gonna go a long way this week.
So I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Does hitting the grandstand and bouncing to within 3 feet for eagle count as strokes gained around the green? Rahm would be leading the field in that, baby.
I was just going to say, that counts as strokes gained John Rahm, being John Rahm.
The luckiest of luck guys. Man, oh, man.
I mean, when some guys got it going on, they got everything going on.
Yeah.
All right, some weather real quick before we jump into some picks. Typically pretty windy in this part of Florida. We're just 7 miles from the Atlantic coast. You're going to have that standard kind of 10 to 20 mile an hour gusting wind throughout, which perhaps feels like more just because of the way this course is oriented. You've got that direct exposure on many of those tee boxes to crosswinds. Again, maybe not going to see the huge like 20, 30 mile an hour gusts we think of when we think of very windy conditions, but this is going to be kind of a steady, consistent breeze, again, across those exposed tee boxes that makes it tricky to really pull the right club on a lot of these holes. Pretty typical weather week in Florida, highs in the low to mid 80s. Again, you got light winds around 10 miles an hour sustained. Got a few gusts in that 15, 20 mile an hour range. But again, for the most part, not going to see anything too crazy. Sunday, probably the most difficult day for wind.
Sounds like typical Florida weather around the coast.
Yep. I mean, that's about what you sign up for.
Yeah. And those 10 to 20 mile an hour gusts, you know, you're so warm and it doesn't feel like the wind is blowing. So you really gotta be aware.
No, you absolutely do.
Yeah.
Palm Beach Gardens, Florida is the Wind Finder location if you're interested in checking out the extended forecast for yourselves. All right, let's make some picks. Shallow Cal. Where's your card start at this week?
I'm starting up top, man. I'm starting up top with
you short of 22 to 1?
Yeah, I'm starting up top with your boy who pipped himself. Yeah, I'm going win only, 14 to 1. One of my favorite golfers. If I had to be a professional golfer, I think I would be Shane Lowry. Dude just looks like one of us. He acts like one of us. He is fiery. He is emotional. And he really just puts it all out there on the course. He's got a little history here, I would say. And you put him into the stat machine. And he's one of the top in the field this week in ball striking, tee to green, approach, and off the tee. All key statistics that we're looking at. He's got course history, and the wind does not dominate him. He dominates the wind. Shane Lowry is the wind dominator. Not the best around the green, but I think he can get it done enough in the other categories to overcome any maybe potential shortcomings there. He has an axe to grind after last year, and he is going to come in firing. Shane Lowry, 14-1, win only.
You weren't enticed by Sung JM, 6.5-1?
Yeah, I was. But then Sung J looked at me with those heavy eyes, and he said, I don't have it this week. It is his best surface putting. You know, he's best on Bermuda grass. Unfortunately, I think he kind of mails it in this week. Most of the other top guys are taking the week off. I don't think Sungjae wants to play a whole 72, man. Honestly, I think he wants to. He's in Florida. He's there. He's going to make his appearance. He's going to get his appearance fees from his sponsors, etc. And I think he's probably going to miss the cut.
I'm not going to find out in terms of placing my money on that bet.
Yeah.
I don't care if it is Sungjae's week. I'm happy to pass and lose to Sungjae M as a 6.5-1 winner, because I just cannot envision any scenario in a professional golf tournament where I'm betting Sungjae M 6.5-1.
I mean, if he was playing in our annual Spider Cup, Ryder Cup style event, I might bet Sungjae.
Yeah, but that's not a professional golf tournament.
It's not a professional golf tournament. That's right.
I was interested in Sungjae. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Past winner here, absolute horse for the course. I was interested in Sungjae in the numbers we saw on him last year, at the number that you got Shane Lowry at this year. And if I had seen a 14-1 on Sungjae at this tournament in this field, even as the leader in the odds in the betting market, I'd have been all over that. But 6.5-1, no thank you.
Yeah. See, I can still bet Shane Lowry. Having a short card this week, still betting Shane Lowry at 14 kind of allows me a little wiggle room to add, to have that top end bet there, and then maybe add a couple placements to try to recoup some of that winnings. Or if he doesn't, show good.
Yeah, sure. I think it's a fine strategy. I've actually got a short card myself this week, and it's not because this is a terrible field. It is not because this is a difficult, unpredictable golf course. I gravitated pretty quickly to four guys, felt pretty good about all four, knew that a couple of them at the top were going to be at much shorter odds, potentially even a little shorter showing up than I thought they would be at, but I knew I was going to have to spend a little more money up top on a couple of those guys. So I'm with you. Shorter card this week. I'm kind of more homed in, more focused on four guys with just a 10-unit outlay. But I feel pretty good about those picks and how it came together. I'm going to start mine just behind Shane Lowry in the betting market. 1.5 points each way. Alex Noren, 22-1.
That guy sucks.
That guy does suck. But I think if he's going to find it, this is a potential place. Very similar vibes here to Le Golf National, where his last win came at in 2018. Should be comfortable here. He lives just down the road from Palm Beach Gardens and has for quite some time now. Got a couple top fives around this place, including fifth place last year. Also a big game hunter, which is a big reason why I like Alex Noren this week, even at the short numbers.
This ain't no big game.
Well, it ain't no big game, but the test mirrors a lot of big games.
Very true.
Mirrors a U.S. Open setting, a PGA setting. Again, we've had a run of, the last four winners or so who are not in the same class as, guys like Justin Thomas, Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, even, a Patty Harrington and Ernie Els kind of on the back end of their prime. These are all guys that are major champions that conquered PGA National. And I think the fact that we have these long shot winners, longer shot and lesser known names the last few years is more a reflection of the field than the test of golf. Because I do think this is very similar in nature to major championship golf. So I'm interested in guys who have won those big events. Alex Noren, two-time Rolex Series winner, French Open, as well as the BMW Championship. Got a couple of European Masters wins, plus a British Masters to his name. Not the greatest start to 2023. Missed cut in his first two PGA Tour events, Phoenix Open and Genesis. But actually coming in with pretty decent form over in Europe last couple months. He was T5 at Abu Dhabi in January, T2 at the Tour Championship back in November, December. T2 at Dunhill Links in October. So I like that. I like the longer-term form. And then lastly, just kind of the narrative piece, fourth in the current Ryder Cup standings. Guys tend to go well in Ryder Cup years when they've got a chance to make that team. I know certainly Alex Noren would love to get back there. Member of the 2018 winning European side at, again, Le Golf National. So I think that's going to fuel him. I think that's going to fire him up a little bit. He's got to come in somewhere and take one of these tournaments along the way. And this is a great opportunity without a lot of the big dogs there. All right. We got a couple overlaps on the card this week, a couple opportunities for a team win. So why don't you, Shallow Cal, start us off with the first shot at 25-1.
25-1. Has done very well on the DP World Tour.
I'm done calling it the DP World Tour, by the way.
Yeah. Okay.
They don't call themselves the DP World Tour. The website
is still europeantour.com.
The website is still europeantour.com. All right.
I'm entering dpworldtour.com, to be honest.
I'm done. It is the European Tour forever and from here on out for me. All right, continue.
All right. Homie can drive the ball, man. He is a great driver of the ball. On this course, I think that you can neutralize a lot of the long iron shots by playing those longer shots with less club, if that makes sense. So if you're going to be 160 yards out and you're Minwoo Lee and you're hitting, say, you know, 9 iron, but you're in a shorter hitter and you're hitting, say, an 8 iron, that makes a little bit of a difference, you know. Not a whole ton of difference to these guys, but yeah, it's one less club. You're going to be more accurate. You're going to tend to hit more greens. You're going to tend to seek the pin a little bit better. He was 12th on the DP Tour in 2020, the European Tour in 2022 in strokes gained off the tee, 5th in driving distance, and 19th in strokes gained tee to green. So decent putter of late. He's been working on those irons. He's been working on that putter. He's got 2 wins in his young career already. He's got a couple of very, 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 very close, very close calls. And one of those wins was actually going toe-to-toe with Matt Fitzpatrick and Thomas Dietrich in a playoff and coming out on top. And, you know, are they two of the best players in the world? Yeah, I'd say they're, you know, based on their ranking, they're two of some of the better players in the world. And one of them has a major to their name. So, you know, I like Minwoo Lee here. I'm going Minwoo Lee 25-1. I think if he's going to make his breakthrough on the PGA Tour, this is a perfect spot for it with a very weak field. He knows how to win. He knows how to close. Let's get it done here. 25-1.
Yeah, I'm on Minwoo as well. I'm going 1.5 points each way at 25-1. Really good run of form on the European Tour coming in. T13 at the Hero Dubai Desert Classic. T2 before that, Abu Dhabi for the HSBC. And going back a bit further than that, showed very well back home in Australia in December. He was 3rd at the Aspis Handa Australian Open, 4th, T4 at the Australian PGA. And then a little bit further, T12 at the Tour Championship to wrap last season. So certainly on a nice little run of form here. I mentioned earlier players who have won a major or contended have tended to go well here. Again, some of those names like a JT, Rory, Adam Scott. All major winners. Minwoo doesn't have a major, but in his very abbreviated career in majors, he's gone pretty well. T14 in his first and only Masters. T27, first and only U.S. Open. He's played the Open twice, got one missed cut, but he was T21 last year. So he certainly got the chops for big-time golf. And again, not saying this is big-time golf by the field, but by the test on the course.
But he's only 24 years old. So in his 24-year-old, I mean, he's on a natural progression here to start to win on the PGA Tour. You know, he's starting to do it elsewhere. He's starting to finish well in those big, big tournaments with deep fields. Now, there's no John Rahm. There's no Colin Morikawa. There's no Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, you know, Tony Finau. The list goes on and on and on. Rory, he's arguably one of the best golfers on the field.
Yeah. And you mentioned this. He's an excellent putter, 16th in strokes gained putting over on the European Tour. But importantly, at this course, Minwoo doesn't make a ton of bogeys, just over two per round on average, excuse me, which puts him 22nd on the European Tour. So I'm with you. All the pieces align. It's tough to come over and win in America. I get it. A lot of guys has taken them a long time to make that transition from Europe. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick being one of the prime examples, so he was able to break through and get that U.S. Open win. So I get it. That is tough. But this is a good spot for Minwoo. All right.
We're through the 20s. Or, well, I guess I have a 28, but I'm very shocked that you don't have Aaron Wise on your card.
Is that your 28?
No, it's not. Wait, no, you're an Aaron Rye guy, not Aaron Wise. That's right.
I'm an Aaron Wise guy too, and I absolutely considered Aaron Wise.
All right.
I can't get past those wayward irons, man. Something is just wrong. Something has been off ever since the new year kicked back up. And I wanted to bet Aaron Wise this week, and had the number been just a little better, not a ton, but a little better, I might have thought harder about it. But I just don't like what I see from that run of form right now.
Yeah.
All right, who's your 28?
Oh, like I said, Billy Ho, man. 28-1. We haven't really seen much of him, but he showed well in Phoenix. He's hitting his irons very well. He putted much, much better. He's from Florida. This is his preferred surface. This is a track that, you know, how many times has Billy Horschel played this course? I mean, probably, I'd say probably close to 100, honestly. College golf in Florida, grew up in Florida. As long as that good iron player, as long as that driver can just don't go, you know, hitting driver all over hell and half of Georgia, and you'll be all right here, Billy. You'll be all right, man. This is the type of tournament that Billy Horschel wins. Tough course, 10 to 15 under par winning score. He's going to hang. He's going to, you know, work his way through this course in a very professional manner. And if he can get to that 10 to 15 under par, he's going to have a chance to win this. The Memorial, he was right there. He's won a number of, I guess now they would be considered elevated tournaments. Yeah. As opposed to just random weird events. So I like Billy here. I like his game here. He's comfortable. He's back home. Hopefully he's well rested. So yeah, you know, he's got 8 wins on tour so far. So like I said, you know, got a Byron Nelson, got a Memorial. He freaking won match play 1 year and won the tour championship even. So Billy Ho can win some big tournaments. So let's see Billy Ho go. And by the way, the winning stroke of his tour championship, Memorial, and the Byron Nelson was like 11, 12, and 13. So he's right in there with those scores.
Okay. I don't disagree with any of that. It's absolutely a course for Billy Ho, absolutely a course that he can and probably should have won at by this point. I was interested myself. Only thing, that steered me away from Billy Ho this week is he tends to win when he's in form. His wins come on the back of a couple weeks of really good golf, more often than not over his career. Not a lot of good golf being played right now by Billy Ho. Strokes gained tee to green, losing strokes to the field three of his last four. Only one he didn't, strangely enough, was last week at Genesis. A missed cut, he was positive, a half stroke tee to green. But there's been something a little bit off there, too. And now I'm not, again, you know, had the number been just a little bit bigger on Billy Ho, I would have been in, just like on Aaron Wise. I'm willing to overlook current form a lot of times for players of their caliber. But I was scared off by that. You're not worried at all about current form on old William Ho?
Well, last week at Genesis wasn't great, but I mean, you look at that course, and that course eats up a lot of the best players in the world. I mean, look at what it did to Justin Thomas on days 2, 3, and I guess I didn't really pay attention on day 4 because I was like, fuck that guy, he sucks. the Riv eats up a lot of great players. You know, the week before, somewhere in Phoenix, where it was, you know, I guess neither of these courses are really, really like PGA National too much. But I would say that in Phoenix with the water and the desert, you kind of play a little bit more like PGA National. So, you know, he was gaining strokes, hitting his irons well, and putted much better. So we'll see.
All right. William Ho.
It's more of a narrative Florida play, honestly.
Sure. And honestly, in a field like this, I think it's a very viable strategy to go that route.
Especially when you're struggling to find guys in the 20s that you can actually bet.
Sure. All right. You got anything else before 50s?
No, and 50 is where I end it.
All right. Well, let's jump in right there then, because we are both on Adrian Meronk 50-1. I'm 1 point each way. I was surprised to see where he opened, first of all, in other books. He was 35-1 on DraftKings and FanDuel. Now he has since drifted some on both books back into the 40s. But I was pretty happy to see that 50-1 number. A little surprised that it's still out there because I thought he'd be more of a chalky play than maybe we've seen to this point.
Yeah, bet MGM. That's where I found the 50-1 because, you know, since I was going win only, it didn't matter which book I had him on. And bet MGM had the 50-1, and I had looked at Bet Rivers and started drifting over to see what else, you know, was available. And when I saw him at 50-1 on BetMGM, I just tossed it in there.
Yeah. I mean, I like that number a lot in this field. My fellow Pole has 3 career professional wins, 2 on the European Tour, 1 on the Challenge Tour, only 29 years old and starting to come into his own a little bit. Playing some really good G right now. A win and shit.
Yes, very good. Very good.
In form coming in.
That's why I'm a little bit worried, is because I feel like he's the Twitter golf darling this week. And I feel like he's going to have a huge shout out golf tips checker. He's going to have a huge slice of the pie in his weekly most tipped chart.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I'm a little surprised. I just given some of the chatter on him that those numbers have hung around as long as they have. I thought there'd be more action nibbling away at that, but still some decent ones out there. Just hope that he hasn't peaked here in his recent form. He's got a win in 3 top 10s in his last 5 starts worldwide. T4 at Ras Al Khaimah, T10 at Abu Dhabi, won the Australian Open back in December, again, second win on the European Tour, and then also made the cut at Riv last week, finished T45 along with Tiger, of all people. Good driver of the golf ball. I mean, I'm interested in that.
Very good driver of the golf ball.
7th on the European Tour, strokes gained off the tee. What else about his game attracted you this week?
Strokes, I mean, yeah, strokes gained off the tee. Strokes gained tee to green. I mean, not the best with approach necessarily, but
he's fine.
But he's fine. He's fine. Like I said with Minwoo, he's got the distance. He's got the distance to make up that that, you know, 160, 170, 180 yard approach, hitting a little bit less club than his competitors. He's a stones putter, man. If that putter gets hot here, he's going to be in contention. And there's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, I love a good narrative play, particularly when it backs up some really good stats and some really good form.
Yeah.
Got a lot to play for here the next 6 weeks or so. He is just outside the top 50 in the official world golf rankings, 52nd right now.
Masters!
I mean, Augusta is just over the horizon. You can almost hear the songbirds calling out. And I believe that means something to these guys. I mean, they know exactly where we are in the calendar. They know, for the most part, what is required between now and then to get a spot. And again, at 29 years old, an ascending professional, the first Polish player to win on the European Tour, I gotta believe that is chief among his goals right now, is to get to Augusta. And nothing goes farther than a showing here and picking up some of those crucial official world golf ranking points.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for you. Nothing else on the card?
No, I'm gonna add some position plays and maybe a position parlay as well. One guy very interested in his position numbers is Pearson Cootie. If I said that right, did I say the first name right?
You did.
All right, great. It's spelled so damn weird, man. he's got way too many letters in there for it just to be Pearson.
There's a lot of vowels in there.
Yeah,
consonants.
We're gonna go Cootie-licious. And you know, I'm really looking for a top 40 number on him. Maybe even a top 20, depending on where we sit with that. Just fresh out of college. Did he win the national championship last year?
I don't recall. I think maybe
it was, he was right there. Him and his brother, right? I think that he's
Gordon Sargent, Vandy freshman. That's right. But yeah, Cootie was, I think Cootie won PGA Tour U.
Okay, got it. So he's right there. One of the guys that you know, you don't have too much information on as far as how's he going to go in a PGA Tour setup and being on the PGA Tour. But I think you can get a little bit of an advantage with the numbers coming out of college like that. You know, we might be able to see something that's potentially mispriced.
Yeah, so he's an interesting one. He has two wins already on the Korn Ferry Tour, so he's one away from the automatic promotion.
But he either wins or he misses the cut on the Korn Ferry Tour. It's the craziest shit ever.
Four tournaments he's played on the Korn Ferry Tour in 2023, three missed cuts and a victory. The ultimate feast or famine.
Let's feast, baby. Come on.
Well, I got one more on the card. Can't even really call it a true long shot. Did not even make it into the 80s this week at PGA National. It's a bit surprising for me, but I'm going to wrap things up with 1 point each way on Joseph Bramlett, 70-1. Joseph.
Your boy.
It's not my boy. I think this is actually the first time I've ever bet Joseph Bramlett.
No.
Yeah, I'm more of a, I think who you're thinking of is Hankley Beota. I'm a big Hankley Beota guy.
Yeah.
But I'll take the plunge this week.
No Taylor Pendrith from you. I'm a little shocked.
I thought about Taylor too. Number was a little short for me. I'm just not convinced this is the course for him. I could be wrong. I mean, a lot of Canadians do tend to go well at PGA National, but I just don't know that this is the course for him. But I like what I've seen from Bramlett recently. He's got progressive form his last three. He's gone 54, 13th, and 7th. Really impressive, particularly those last two times out at difficult golf tests. Gained 10.2 strokes total en route to that 7th place finish at Pebble Beach a couple weeks ago. A lot of that was driven by his tee to green game, which I love to see here. Gained 3.2 strokes there. Also, approach play has been very good. Gained almost 8 strokes total in the 13th place finish at Torrey for the Farmers a couple weeks ago. And again, an impressive nearly 8 strokes gained just on tee to green. So coming in with some form in the right spots. Putter has been really bad here in his two previous missed cuts. Lost nearly 4 strokes on the green in 2021. Lost 4.5 in 2020. So definitely need him to find something there. Not a great putter for his career, but again, firing on all cylinders elsewhere on a tough course where, you know, if you can, you don't even need a hot putter. You can just get a putter that cooperates and the rest of the game is hitting on all cylinders tee to green. I think he's a nice punt around that 70-1 range. All right, final thoughts. Anybody else you considered, you didn't bet? Any FOMO guys out there for you this week?
Yeah, man, I was really excited to open up the app and hopefully see Garrick Higo like 150, 250-1. This dude opens up at 55-1, and I was like, oh man, you totally ruined Higo week. So
this is a bummer.
I was a little disappointed that he was priced way, 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 way too high for me. So, I love me some Garrick Higo.
I mean, I actually thought the 55-1 was somewhat fair on him in this field, given that he has shown a little bit here since the calendar turned to 2023. I was more turned because I took a look too. Don't get me wrong. I was more turned off by the course fit for him. I don't think this is a good place for his driver. I'm just not convinced that's a great place for lefties in general. So no thanks, but I took a look as well.
So I think that, a lot of his driver mishap will be naturally minimized because he's not going to be hitting driver as much off the tee, you know. He's going to be hitting a lot of long irons and three woods. So, you know, that distance and man, you remember when he was winning on the European Tour, he was putting the ball. I mean, inside of 10 feet, he was automatic.
Oh God, he was so good.
A stones putter. And now he can't buy a putt, it seems like. And he's really laboring on the greens. So until that putter comes back, I'm going to have a hard time putting in a bet 55-1. Much like Sungjae, you know, Sungjae at the top is just too short. And, you know, as much as I think Sungjae can win this tournament, I don't think he's going to win it one every 6 times.
No, I agree with you. Couple for me, Erik van Rooyen, Steven Jagerbombs. Just really like both their games for this course, particularly on tough tracks, but couldn't fit it into the card. As mentioned, really kind of gravitated to those four guys pretty quickly and knew I was going to need to spend a little more up top on Noren and Minwoo, so it really only allowed for four and, you know, could have certainly stretched it to 5 names on the card, but just couldn't get over the hump on EVR or Jagerbombs.
Yeah.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of Playing the Tips. As a reminder, favorite the show, download the show, leave a review for the show. We need it. We appreciate it very much. Shallow Cal, best of luck at Honda this week.
Yeah, you as well. Cheers.